Welcome to What Mortgage TV and the Mortgage Nights one-to-one. I'm Ben Wilkie, the editor of What Mortgage, and I'm here with Mike Cook, who's head of personal lending at Post Office Mortgages. Today, we're going to be talking about first-time buyers. You mentioned budgeting, but how do borrowers work out how much they can afford?
Well, I think there's two parts to working out a detailed budget. And the first is, what is your sort of budget today? So before you've taken this mortgage out, what are your outgoings today? What is luxury versus essential? Everything from travel costs to, you know, your car insurance costs, all your outgoings in the house and your current rent and so forth, just to break all that down. And then you look at what you're looking to buy, where you're looking to buy it, maybe in a different area. So things can go up. So is it further your travel to work? Are your fuel costs or your train costs going to go up? Things like electricity bills or council tax bills can all sort of change in different areas and different sized properties as well. So you've got to look at all these things sort of before and after. And also to make sure that anything that won't be there after you've completed your mortgage, you may be determined to pay your credit card bill off, you may be determined to clear that car loan, whatever it may be, you just got to remember that that frees up some spare money, as well as your indicative mortgage payment that you would have got from going onto a lender's website and getting a sort of illustration. And the FSA actually have a website to assist in budgeting and all things sort of money and mortgage related as well, called moneymadeclear.org.uk, which is also is an additional tool for people to use.
What other costs do borrowers need to think about?
There are quite a few costs to think about before you go into to making that commitment. One of the first things is stamp duty, and there's plenty of websites that will tell you how to calculate stamp duty, which is tax payable upon completion when you actually buy a house that's payable to the government. And that can run up into several thousand pounds. It's definitely worth looking into as well. There's other things like legal costs for buying a property, and something a solicitor will quote you for is their time. Just something to be wary of. Something called disbursements, which is all the other outgoings, photocopying, searching costs, postage costs, that often aren't quoted. So just be careful and make sure you get an indicative quote for the sort of size and location of property. And a lender will often recommend a solicitor if you don't have one lined up or looked into. There's other things involved with arranging the mortgage as well. So for example, sometimes there's upfront fees such as a valuation fee or an arrangement fee, which can often to be like at the post office, you can add that to the loan, or it's payable upon completion rather than upfront at the application. Just something to be wary of, something called bucking fees, which are often payable at the point of application and sometimes are non-refundable or refundable at the lender's discretion. So if, for example, you're buying a property and further down the line you've had a survey done, you've paid for the valuation, but for some reason the seller decides they're not selling the property anymore, you've just got to be careful and just check with the lender before you pay any fees what is refundable, what is not, and at what stage it's payable as well. And there's other things. So on the day of the move, do you need to pay for a removal company, or do you need to hire a kind of man in a van to come and help you as well? So you just got to make sure you look at all things right from today through to when you actually move in as well.
From a lender's point of view, how do you see the current mortgage market?
There are a few ways to view the current mortgage market, but the lender's point of view is sometimes slightly different from a customer's point of view. So, for example, we see good reports coming about the sort of economy and the general state of the UK as a whole, as well as seeing some of the negative reports. But traditionally, and this is something obviously out of the industry's control, is sometimes the negative things tend to be picked up a little bit more by the press and so forth. So it can set a sort of uncomfortable environment sometimes, and sometimes it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more doom and gloom that is put in newspapers and things, the more people tend to look at it in one sort of way. And I think there are some green shoots we've been seeing. You know, for example, house prices overall, there's a general opinion being held that they will largely remain fairly flat with some small fluctuations. And of course, there's also talk about, you know, a double dip recession where the country may go into recession again. And actually, we've seen quite a lot of reports to the contrary, that things are recovering and globally as well. From a lender's perspective, there's mixed messages, but we're overall quite confident in the sort of medium to long term of this market.
What sort of deposit should first-time buyers try and save before looking at buying a home?
the size of deposit required has actually changed over the last few years. And industry data, looking at, say, 3 years ago and beyond, pointed to an average first-time buyer deposit of between 5 and 10%. So on a £100,000 property, you're looking at between £5,000 and £10,000 to put down. That has changed, and more recently, that's looking at between an average of 20 to 25% of the industry as a whole. This is due to a few reasons, and one of those reasons, the last couple of years, there's not been quite so many low deposit products from banks, as they've tended to stick to much safer forms of lending as they repair themselves as an institution. And it's quite important now that to understand, and I think generally with the amount of information available for first-time buyers, they can see the difference in rates between a 10% deposit product and a 15% deposit. Sometimes that difference can be as much as 1% or 1.5% cheaper if you can just find that extra 5% deposit, which is why it's taking first-time buyers generally a little bit longer to get on the ladder, is to save that extra amount.
And how important is it to make sure you don't have other debts when applying for a mortgage?
I think it's important, but not necessarily critical, to go into a mortgage with as little debt as possible. And for example, when a lender looks at how much they will lend you, they look at your income and also your outgoings. Now, servicing a debt and paying a personal loan or a car loan is an outgoing, and it does actually impact the amount a lender will advance to you as your loan. So it is important, if you can reduce as many of those as possible, and if you use an affordability calculator or some to work out what you can borrow on a lender's website, like the post offices, or on what mortgage website as well, there are calculators available. You can try it. Put in your income, put in your outgoings, find out what the lender will lend you. And likewise, you can play around with that, reduce your outgoings if you're going to clear your debts. But I think one of the other important things as well is it's always good to clear your debts as soon as you can before starting another one. They don't snowball. And it's just more liberating to actually go into a big commitment like the roof over your head with other debts taken care of.
How should borrowers work out what type of mortgage is right for them?
There are a few things a borrower can look at to help them choose the right type of mortgage for them. There are two main ones in the market. One is a tracker and one is a fixed. Now, a tracker follows the Bank of England base rate by a set sort of percentage. So the base rate today is 0.5%. It may track the Bank of England base rate by an additional, say, 2%. So the rate you pay is 2.5%. If the Bank of England base rate goes up, so does your mortgage payment. And if the Bank of England rate goes down, your mortgage payment follows it down by that set amount. Now, something to bear in mind, they are temptingly cheap at the moment because the Bank of England base rate is so low, and it has been for a long time. General opinion is that can only go up. Now, if that does, you need to look at, can you afford that mortgage if it starts creeping up in price? So if you take a tracker over a duration of, say, 2 years, which means it will follow by that percentage for a total of 2 years. Now, you need to think, realistically, is that going to be, could that be 2 base rate increases in that time? Could that be 0.5%? Could that be 1%? I think the thing to do is to use a calculator on a lender's website to pick the deal that you're kind of interested in and actually just put in a larger rate. Move it up 1%. What is the difference in monthly payment? And if you have doubts about your ability to pay that in the future, then maybe a tracker isn't the mortgage for you. A fixed rate is exactly that. It's slightly different in that you pay a percentage point up front and it will stay at that percentage, that monthly payment, for a duration. It may be 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, anything up to sort of 10 and 25. If people just want to lock in, pay exactly the same amount every month for as long as their mortgage is a fixed rate, which is great for consistency in budgeting. You know exactly what you're going to pay every month. Yes, they can be a little bit dear in trackers, but that's the offset. You're removing that risk of your mortgage payment changing. I mean, these are a few of the things to consider, but another important point is, in the UK, there tends to be a two-year mentality, so that sort of two-year tracker or two-year fix, then to look around for another deal. It's just important to bear in mind that every time you do that, fees are involved more often than not. When you change lender or take out another deal, it may need another valuation. So sometimes it's worth to consider the difference between looking slightly longer in duration on the basis you pay the fee up front, you follow that deal through, and if you're happy with it, it can save you money in fees.
What sort of advice can a borrower expect to receive?
There's plenty of advice for borrowers available out there. I think over the last sort of couple of years with the credit difficulties, people have generally got a little bit savvier, a little bit more aware of finance and mortgages and the housing market. So people are generally at a better level going into a mortgage than maybe they used to be. And I think one of the other ways to look for advice, obviously the web, and there's plenty of websites funded by either newspapers or publications or lenders themselves to give lots of information to people about getting that first step on the ladder or indeed moving on throughout your sort of mortgage requirements. I think alternatively, if you still need more information, the easiest thing is to talk to a lender either face-to-face, over the phone, and just to get your feel that you are getting your questions answered, feel confident. If you don't feel confident, you'll go into a big commitment quite nervous. It's important to do that. And I think, you know, as part of understanding customer requirements, I've listened in on many phone calls and recorded phone calls to make sure we get our customer requirements in the mortgages we offer. And no question is ever a silly question with this, because people come in with different levels of experience or expertise on credit. And I think, you know, if there is a complex question about a type of property or a type of income or outgoing, if the person on the end of the phone can't answer that question, there are often underwriters on hand to do so as well. So there's a lot of places for information. And if, of course, you still feel you need more, you can also go and see an independent financial advisor or a mortgage broker. Some may charge for advice, but they'll let you know that before you get into discussions about it. If they really need that extra bit of advice and handholding through the process as well.
And how can post office mortgages help first-time buyers?
The post office, we really like first-time buyers. We have multiple levels of deposit from as little as 10% up to 25%. So we have a lot of price points for people depending on their circumstances. We have a broad range from tracker rates through to fixed rates from between 2 years and 5 years. We also have a variety of different fee options. For some people who prefer to pay their fees, arrangement fee when the mortgage completes, we have deals with that. Or we have things called fee savers or fee assists, which can help people with valuation costs, and some even have zero arrangement fee. It just helps keep some of that money available, which is an expensive time buying your first property. So we like to think there's a good breadth and there's a good choice for people as well. And of course, very competitive rates. And we like to deal with you in exactly how you want to be dealt with. If you want to go online, you can do an approval in principle, you can continue doing an online application, all in a total of sort of 30 minutes. Or you can speak to us on the phone, or you can go into any one of our sort of 300 larger branches to speak to somebody face to face. So we like to think we can deal with you in the way you want to be dealt with, and hopefully we have a product that's not only competitive, but it actually meets your requirements as well.
Post Office Mortgages was one of the first lenders to return to allowing a 10% deposit. How does this help first-time buyers?
We were very glad to return to lending from only a 10% deposit when the time was right. Housing was looking a lot more promising for the future, and prices were starting to increase again. So it was the right time to return to this type of lending, which is kind of important for first-time buyers to get on that first step of the ladder. It can vary. So some people, for example, might be saving towards a 15% deposit, but there may be some expenses coming up, like the stamp duty, which is quite a sizable sum sometimes. Or you may be buying into a place that needs elements of renovation, some expensive job like windows or plastering, whatever it may be. So you may wish to keep some of your savings back to help when you move into your place to sort of turning it what you want it to be that bit sooner. So it's all about giving borrowers that choice. So if they want to save for a larger deposit, we have products for them. If they want only a 10% deposit and use the rest of their savings to put towards other things, then that is the borrower's choice. Of course, the other thing is if you're taking your time trying to achieve that next level of 15% or 20% deposit, but that sort of dream home, your first step comes up available that bit sooner. It's just another opportunity to come in and say, I can't wait to save that extra bit. That's the house or the flat we really want. And you can just go for it that little bit sooner as well. All about choices.
Thanks very much indeed for taking the time to speak to us today. And thank you too for watching. Don't forget to check back on What Mortgage TV for future updates.